Good afternoon and welcome to FRAC's After School Meals Matter conference call. My name is Clarissa Hayes and I am a Child Nutrition Policy Analyst here at the Food Research and Action Center. So thanks so much for joining us today. For any newcomers on the line, these calls are held the third Thursday of every month and focus on a different topic around the expansion and improvement of the after school meal program. So we have four great presenters today joining us to share their experience with the after-school meal program in their communities, and I'll be introducing them in just a bit. Today's call topic is on cities operating and supporting the after-school nutrition programs. So we know that city agencies can play an important role in expanding the after-school meal programs, and many are either already at the table or becoming more involved. City agencies can sponsor after-school meal program sites, and city leaders, including mayors and other elected officials, can increase the program's visibility by championing the program and speaking publicly about the benefits it brings to children and families. And also, for the anti-hunger advocates on the line, it's important to connect with your city agencies to not only educate them on the after-school nutrition programs, but also to gauge their capacity and see if they can sponsor or incorporate year-round child nutrition into a broader citywide initiative. And I know city agencies, it can sound kind of broad, but when we talk about it, we mean your mayor's office staff, parks and recreation department staff, school department staff, and health department staff. So those are just some of the examples when you start to think about cities and the agencies. And providing meals for children during the after-school hours is really a win-win. Cities can bring in more federal funds, and children receive the nutrition they need when the school year ends. It also is really important, and it helps strengthen after-school programming, which is an important resource for many communities. And just to give a little background, for the past 4 years, FRAC has partnered with the National League of Cities on an initiative called CHAMPS, or Cities Combating Hunger Through the After School and Summer Meal Programs. Through this, we are able to grant funds to cities across the country to develop and implement strategies for elected city officials and city agencies to expand access to these important programs. So we are actually doing another round of this funding, and we are focusing on Alabama, California, and Kansas. So if you are on the line and you are in one of these three states, we would be happy to talk to you more about different ways to engage your city agencies and expand access to these programs. So today we have four speakers joining us who are going to talk about different initiatives being led by cities to expand access to after-school meals across the country. After our speakers present, we'll open up the lines for questions. And like I mentioned earlier, you can also feel free to email me your question at chayes@frac.org. And I think that's it from me. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to our first speaker. And kicking it off today is Susan Gayo. She is the Director of Health Initiatives at the City of Denver. All right, Susan, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you, Clarissa. Hello, everyone from Denver. We've been fortunate that we were involved with with National League of Cities and FRAC since the beginning of their kind of implementation. It was really a great timing thing because we had a new mayor, Mayor Michael B. Hancock, who wanted to focus on things such as addressing basic needs of children and families and increasing the number of children in Denver that were at a healthy weight. So in 2012, a small team from Denver attended a meeting hosted by the National League of Cities, and in a similar topic as today, to learn about the roles that cities could play in after-school and summer meal programs. At that meeting, the team learned that we could be a sponsor of the program and that we would receive reimbursement for the meals that we would see served, that would help fund the program. So as a city, we began thinking that that would be a great opportunity for us to start having some funding in this program. We also, at that time in 2012, started talking with local youth-serving agencies to understand what they needed. And what they told us they needed was an entity who could handle the administrative burden of meal programs, because some of them had been sponsors but couldn't afford the time or the resources to do that for themselves. So we as a city made a decision to say we could lift that burden off of them, because who better than cities to handle administrative burdens and paperwork? So we wanted them to focus on what they did best, serving their youth. So what could we do as a city was really the question. The other thing we heard from our youth-serving partners was that children needed access to healthy food. They were hungry, and things like, one of the quotes that I remember well was, root beer flavored milk and Oreo cookies wasn't going to cut it for providing nutrition to their children. So in 2012, we started piloting that first summer a meal program. We thought it would be a small pilot. Turned out we were wrong. We were the third largest food sponsor in the city of Denver that summer by serving almost 60,000 meals. And the majority of our meals were served in recreation centers. And because it was a success, we were able to continue doing that. And every summer, we have increased our participation and the number of sites to expand to libraries, to youth serving organizations, growing the number of recreation centers in our communities that were at need, and to the point where last year we served over 65,000 meals last summer across 26 sites. And we serve all four available meals that are able to be reimbursed by the summer food program, which include breakfast, lunch, a snack, which could be either in the morning or the afternoon, and then a supper. We also were serving on evenings and weekends because we had a program here in the city at our rec center called Night Moves that targeted youth on Friday and Saturday evenings. So as part of the activities, they were provided access to hot suppers. So given that initial success around summer, we decided that we would take the next step in moving into the snack and supper venue, the at-risk after-school meal program. And at that time in the fall of 2012, that program had just been in operation in the state of Colorado for about a year. So it was pretty new to the state. They were still trying to understand the rules around it. So it became a challenge for us. Fortunately, we received a CHAMPS grant to help us with promoting the program, receiving technical assistance from FRAC, and being able to provide equipment, purchasing food warmers for our sites, because we knew that at our recreation centers that hot meals would really help promote and encourage more healthy eating behavior because, you know, in Colorado, we have these cold winters, and sometimes the cold food doesn't resonate as much for sites and the children during the cold months. And so a hot meal such as spaghetti, any kinds of other like warm dishes like pastas, chicken dishes, hot chicken sandwiches really help to encourage children to eat healthy because many of our children aren't used to having access to healthy food. So our partnership with our healthy food vendor, Revolution Foods, really helped us to support that mission of creating healthy opportunities for children. So when we started participating in the Snacks and Supper program, it was a long, challenging process, but fortunately for all of you, states have learned, and FRAC as an ally has helped to change that policy and legislative landscape so that it's easier for cities to do. And we have been serving the meals for children since 2012, and the first year we started with about 47,000 meals being served, and now we're at about 90,000 meals being served to children during those after-school meal times. And because we've been working at this for so long, we've actually created year-round sites so families and children know that they can go year-round to our sites and get access to a meal and that they know what it's like and they can trust and have confidence in that. Because for many of our communities, confidence and faith in those organizations they work with are really important because many of them haven't had positive experiences, and so for them to be able to have that really helps them to say, we know that our children are going to get access to a meal that is a quality. So as being a sponsor for the program, we have to do a lot of requirements, but the ones I'll kind of focus on is that we coordinate the meals for the sites. We have an online ordering system that we use for our sites to order on. We conduct the trainings, and over time we've really adapted and be able to know what we need to do. So it's become easier over time. You know, the heavy lift comes when you first start doing that, but over time it becomes easier because the legislation you become more familiar with, the policies you understand more, and you've also created stronger collaborations with your anti-hunger organizations and your state agencies to know how you all work together, because the state agencies, they know they have to go through all the policies that they need to support, but they also, their goals are to serve as many children as possible because it helps them to expand these programs. So it's become easier for us because we have these routines in place, and because of this, we were a beneficiary of another National League of Cities grant where we mentored the cities of Aurora and Englewood into creating their own meal programs. And as part of that work, our anti-hunger organization, Hunger Free Colorado, worked to create a guide that for cities to understand their roles in reducing child hunger. And I believe that Clarissa will send out that the link to that document after this call so that you all can have access to it and look at it, because we felt that we learned a lot in these processes, and it wasn't just about sharing it with our local communities but nationwide so that cities can play this role, because it's an important role and that we do as a city. It's one that we don't think about as a city, but once cities identify it, really becomes a change maker. As I mentioned in the beginning of the call, Mayor Michael B. Hancock has become a huge advocate of the program. Initially, he did things like press conferences to launch our programs, participated in summer food program kickoff events with the mascot of the Denver Broncos, so that was a big hit. He also recorded robocalls that were sent out to all the children in Denver Public Schools and schools that qualified for the meal program, which is a 50% free and reduced lunch rate. That actually is something now that our governor is doing statewide. So again, elected officials, once they see that there's a role for the cities, really help to support the program. I think that's about it. I would say, though, the last thing I'll close with is that for city agencies on the call that are interested in participating, I would say you're at a great place because you have NLC and FRAC here to help, and they can connect you to it. It takes persistence, but once it starts happening, you can make huge changes in your cities around these issues of combating hunger. So I think that's it for me. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Susan. That was wonderful. I really like how you mentioned the work and the help that Hunger Free Colorado gave during the project, and I think for the city agencies on the call, just to remember that this might be intimidating or it might be a little confusing, but there are lots of advocates in your state, especially the state anti-hunger organizations, who can help you through this process, so definitely tap into them. Well, thank you, Susan, for that, and we will definitely send around the resource that you mentioned. All right, so we are going to move on to our next speaker, and next we are going to have Aloysa Martinez from the City of Albuquerque.
Thank you for having me here. Hello, everyone. I am here in Albuquerque, and we started this program in 2014. And so far, I can say it's been a great program, not only for our kids, but for parents, I want to tell you a little bit about how it started. The New Mexico Appleseed Organization generated support from the city and the county officials to address child hunger. The New Mexico Appleseed Organization is a part of a nationwide effort to address root causes of poverty. Interest was generated to participate in the CACFP At-Risk Supper Meals program. The City of Albuquerque is the official sponsor. However, Bernalillo County is a partner in the endeavor and made contributions to getting the program started. So the way the county helped, and that was a huge part, they contributed funding to, for the startup of our kitchen, the kitchen equipment. So that worked out great. The commercial kitchen is a city-owned facility and used by a contracted vendor to prepare meals daily. And our vendor is amazing. They have just really stepped up to the plate, and I mean, they just serve amazing meals. Let me share a couple of them with you. A chicken pot pie with potatoes, peas, carrots, buttermilk biscuit, fruit, and milk. Another one is frito pie with the corn chips, chili con carne, cheese, lettuce, lemon milk. The fettuccine alfredo with chicken, peas, and carrots, the fresh fruit and milk, barbecue pork sandwich on whole wheat bread, the mashed potatoes, fruit, and so on. It's just amazing, the meal that the kids are getting now, that and the hot meals. And the way, let me give you a little bit of information. The At-Risk Meals is a joint venture between Bernalillo County and the City of Albuquerque. The program was implemented on September 29th, 2014, in 6 city community centers and 3 county community centers. In the first month of operation, approximately 7,600 hot nutritious meals were served to children enrolled in the after-school program. On March 2, 2015, an additional 9 sites were added, 7 city centers and 2 county centers, for a total of 18 sites. In the month of March, approximately 14,000 meals were served. In August 2015, school year 2015-16, an additional 6 sites will be added to include all city community centers, county centers, and the Heights and Boys Girls Club, for a total of 24 sites. In the month of October, approximately 22,000 meals were served. There is a projected 225,000 total meals to be served for the 2016-2017 school year, which is really amazing. The city and county collaborated together to address the nutritional needs for our children. Their goal was to ensure each child enrolled in an eligible after-school program receives one hot, nutritious supper meal a day. And let me tell you, the parents are really excited about that, because a lot of them, you know, a lot of those kids, when they come pick them up, they go to after-school soccer or whatever they have scheduled, where the parents pick them up, basketball. And they're just so grateful, you know, that you would give them a hot meal before they go to those, instead of stopping and getting fast food. So they really appreciate that. And also, if anyone's interested, I think, and, you know, the people from Denver covered pretty much all of the program works, but my suggestions would be, for a startup, what helps us is to identify your current eligible programs and potential partners. You know, you can start with a few sites, must be in full compliance with all program requirements. Monitoring operations and programs daily, weekly, and monthly is very, very important. Daily communication and coordination with sites and vendor is highly important. I mean, that's what gets our program, just keeps us on track, you know, by daily communicating with all our sites and with our vendors, with our vendor. And also, the At-Risk program is a reimbursement program, so highly important to monitor meals ordered versus meals served. Only first meal served to each participant will be reimbursed. So that's something to keep in mind. So that's why it's very important that you monitor those, your meals daily. Ongoing training is available to all participating sites. We do that depending on, you know, how our staff turnaround is. So as soon as we get new staff, we get in there and we start training them as needed. Of course, your staff is required, and, you know, your site monitors are required also for this program. But other than that, I don't know if I think I've covered everything else. The way our program works, you know, we're just really pleased with it. The kids are pleased with it. Our Our mayor is a great part. Our Commissioner Stebbins has been really a great part of this too. I mean, we've all worked together, and I tell you, I cannot stress teamwork. You know, you have to really communicate and work together to make all these programs, and it takes a lot of people, but I've seen the great people and how much it means to our community and our city and how important it is for our children. So I cannot thank them all for their hard work and for this program. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. It sounds like there are a lot of partnerships on many levels that have made that successful, so that's great to hear. And just a reminder for everybody on the line that we are going to hold questions until the end, but if you have one, you can feel free to send it to me at chayes@frac.org. All right, so we are going to move ahead to our next speaker. Our next speaker is Terry Kerwawich from the City of Philadelphia. And sorry, Terry, if I butchered your last name, but the floor is yours. Terry, you might be on mute.
Okay, sorry, I had to unmute.
There you go, thank you.
And you said my name perfectly, so that was fine. So, hi everybody. My name is Terry Kerwawich. I'm a program director with Philadelphia Parks and Recreation, and one of my duties is to oversee our food program, which is both the summer food program and the after-school meal program. I can't take credit for starting this program. We've been in operation for a little over 50 years with the summer food service program. And then once the after-school snack program became available, we started out with snacks, but now we serve, we got rid of the snacks and we serve full meals now with our after-school program. We are probably the largest provider and sponsor in the state and in the city here. Basically, in the state of Pennsylvania, over 55% of all the meals served through the program are served in Philadelphia. And that's a combination not just with Parks and Recreation, but there's the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, as well as some a few other smaller providers who serve meals here in the area. But Parks and Rec is the largest. We normally, in our summer program, we serve about 850 sites per year. And with our after-school programs, we have about 100 sites that get served during the school year. Normally, we serve well over 2 million meals every year. Sometimes it's over 3 million, depending on the year. And it's a combination. Like I said, we do our parks and rec facilities. We also, in the summer, we have what are called play streets. And there's about 650 of them in the summer. And what they are small streets that may not be near a rec center where the kids could go to get a meal. So we have someone who will volunteer to be like the play street supervisor, and that's normally someone that lives on that block, and it could be like a stay-at-home mom or, you know, a retired grandma or grandpa who, you know, wants to see the kids have a safe place to play and get a healthy meal. So with that, folks can apply for the play street, which allows them to close off that street from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. so that the kids can play without having to worry about traffic. And then they get the lunch and snack meals for the kids to give out that day. So that's a big bulk of our program in the summer. And then we also do about 150 rec centers in the summer. And then we have some partner sites that are churches or, you know, other community-based day camps that are not housed in recreation centers. So it is a big task to try and coordinate that during the summer and even during the school year with the 100 after-school sites. But we're lucky in regards is that the city, we're able to hire the staff through the Parks and Rec Department to oversee the program, and then, you know, we get reimbursed for those costs through the meal program. But we have about 15 staff people on during the school year, and they're the ones that do all the, you know, collate the paperwork when it comes in from the sites with their daily meal counts and any problems that come up, they'll handle that, and then they report all the information into the state and also work with our vendor. We have a vendor that we coordinate all these delivery sites with. Our kids, unfortunately, we do not serve hot meals, so they get basically a box lunch. But we do coordinate that with the vendor, and we try and vary it up so that it's not always a cold sandwich. It's always cold, but not necessarily a sandwich. And we've worked with our health department on that to try and come up with different types of meals that still meet the guidelines put on by the Department of Education here in Pennsylvania and the USDA. So, you know, they get sandwiches on some days, and other days we have yogurt with crackers and, you know, whatever the five-piece component is, but it's just, it's not sandwiches all the time. So I think the kids like that variety. And we also conduct, each year we'll do different types of taste tests if we want to try a new type of meal to see if it's something we think the kids may like, and then we can adjust the menu with that. And we kind of go over that with the vendor as well as the health department. We'll have them look at it too. And they've given us recommendations over the years, and we've tried to incorporate what we could that would still fit within the budget of the program. Some of the other things that we try and do to try and build our numbers and have more kids coming out to receive meals is, especially with the play streets, we try and provide them with some equipment to keep the kids physically active while they're there and give them something to play and do so that they'll stay for the meals. And we've also, in the past, we've had different special events go out to the play streets. We did a literacy program one year. We were trying to work on keeping the kids getting, you know, improving their reading during the summer when they're not in school. So we had a program that we worked with a group called the Foster Grandparents. And so we had those folks go out to the sites. We were able to partner with the First Book organization, and we got books for all the kids at some of the designated sites. So they got 6 books, one for each week of a 6-week program, and the foster grandparents would go out and read with the kids, and they would discuss the books and, you know, trying to keep the kids, you know, in a little bit of an educational mode during the summer. And that was helpful. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that this year because of some budget issues within the foster grandparents organization, but we're looking to try and build that up and be able to start that again next year. With our after-school programs, we also have done some nutrition and physical activity programs with a grant that we received through NRPA and the Walmart Foundation. So we've worked with the Oregon Wise Guys program that we've had someone go out to the sites and do a 6 to 8 week program with the kids so that they are learning about good nutrition and physical activity and why it's important and things like that. So, you know, that's been very helpful. Also, as a result of the grant, we were able to purchase some coolers that we would need for the play streets so that they would be better able to keep food at proper temperatures, you know, so to avoid, you know, any food going bad or any health department violations and things like that. Since they are off-site from our regular recreation centers. I guess that's pretty much the gist of our program. So I'll cut it there and then see if anybody has any questions at the end.
Thanks, Terry. I love that idea of the play streets. I think that's so neat. All right, so we are going to go ahead to our last speaker before we open it up for questions. And last but not least, we will have Jim Williamson from the Nashville After Zone Alliance speak. All right, Jim, floor is yours.
Thank you for having me on the call. First, let me start by telling you a little bit about NASA, because we're a little unique in terms of the other speakers, in that we actually don't provide the meal programs directly ourselves. We actually do that through our partnerships. NASA itself actually began in 2010 under the leadership of Mayor Carl Dean and his administration, and we are actually the the intermediary for Nashville for extended learning opportunities around the city for after school providers. And we have, as I said, we began in 2010 as a part of the mayor's office, and in 2014 we transitioned over to our public library system, and are now housed in our public library, and that was real strategic in our part, just so that we could kind of weather some of the changes in political landscapes and those kinds of things. Fortunately, with our new mayor, Megan Berry, is extremely supportive of our network and the work that we do. So we're very excited about the future. We are currently, this year, we are at serving 26 middle schools across the city with roughly 46 different partner program sites. And we average anywhere from 15 students to 60 to 75 students per site when at those different locations. NASA itself, the programs that we partner with, we have a kind of a list of pretty healthy list of minimum quality standards that have to be in place for partners to be a part of our network, and one of those addresses healthy snacks or meals in the afternoons for the young people when they get out of school, and so we had gotten quite a bit of feedback from our partners early on about the financial impact of being able to meet that standard along with all of the other standards that we have, but just the financial commitment that was there for that. And so in to try to help address that, we reached out to some of our local other local agencies, local partners, to try to help help alleviate some of that burden. And it really kind of came to a head a couple of years ago with kind of some of the changes in the application process and the reporting process and everything for the meals programs itself. And so we were, through the National League of Cities, we were made aware of kind of a training, if you will, kind of a an information session. And so we invited folks from our local school district who are a major partner of ours in our network to go to the training and kind of hear more about the meals programs and how we might be able to implement something like that in our partnership with the district. And how that evolved is what it ended up being was that the district ended up applying, their nutrition services office ended up applying and were awarded the contract for to be able to offer the meals. And so they actually would take care of all of the creation of the meals in the school cafeterias. They would take care of all of the reporting and the financial aspect and everything. Our partners, the only thing that's required of them is that they make sure that the service of the meals are happening according to standard. Even though there's a cafeteria staff person that is actually doing the handling of the food and that kind of thing, our teams are trained to make sure that the students are getting the right nutritional requirements and for each one of the meals. And it really has evolved into a win-win for everyone involved. Last year, we averaged about 800 meals a day across our network, and ended up serving somewhere around about 20,000 meals over the course of the year last year, and that was just through that partnership there with the district. And then you add to that the partnership that we have with a couple of our other providers that are dealing with not school-based sites but community-based sites. So maybe our local community center or a program that's based at their own facility and not at a school building. We partnered with a couple of organizations like our local food bank to help provide the meals at those sites as well. And so again, it's just been a win-win for everyone going forward across our network. I think this year we're projected to roughly double the number of meals that we served this year or last year. And that's because our school district has really expanded what they have been able to do. They kind of piloted it with the NASA network and used us to kind of test it a little bit and see what how it might work and work out some of the kinks before they opened it up to many of the other programs that they have that happen as a part of our district. And so looking forward to closing out this year, we'll probably end up doubling the number of meals that were served over last year. I think that would cover everything on our end. If you have questions about NASA, by all means, feel free to ask or about how we were able to work out this partnership with the district and be able to serve the meals in our network.
Great. Thanks, Jim. That was a really good example, I think, of how it really does take collaboration across the city to get these meals into programs. So thank you for joining and sharing that. All right. So thanks to our speakers. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the line for questions. And just a reminder, this is a conference call, and we're going to open it up to everybody. So if you could just go ahead and mute yourself if you haven't already. And if you want to ask a question, then you can unmute. It just kind of cuts back on that background noise. So just one moment while I
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are open if anybody has any questions for Susan, Aloysia, Terry, or Jim.
Hi, this is Andrea from Nutritional Development Services at the Archdiocese, and I have a question for Terry.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, Terry, that's great that you are doing the full meal now. Are you doing any hot suppers at all, or are you doing the cold meal?
No, everything's a cold meal.
Okay. Are you doing, like, similar to how you do it in the summer?
Yes.
Like the same? Great. That's wonderful. That's great. Okay. That's just
curious. We found that the kids, like some of the kids, after getting out of school, you know, and they haven't had lunch since noon.
Sure.
They
right.
were coming
or
in
earlier.
And the snack,
right.
Yeah, the snack just wasn't cutting it for them. So
no, I'm glad
yeah,
to
we're
hear
able
that.
To
I didn't know that
meal.
You were doing all the cold meals now. So that's wonderful news.
Yep. Thanks.
Good. You're welcome.
Hello, this is Tara with St. Mary's Food Bank in Phoenix. And I have a question. It doesn't matter who answers, but any suggestions or strategies in working with libraries, especially during summer or after school?
So this is Terry from Philly, and we have done some work with the libraries, not full on citywide, but we had put it out there that we would be willing to have meals provided if any of the different branches wanted to serve meals at their program. And I think we did it probably for about 2 years with the libraries, and we had about 6 different branches who we provided meals for them.
Was this during after school feeding or summer or both?
It was during summer.
Okay. Okay, we libraries want to come on with us during the after school program, but we have a little bit of a challenge starting up like some kind of enrichment activity after school to meet the criteria.
And this is Clarissa at FRAC. Working or library serving meals is definitely something that has been on the increase. We see it a lot more in summer, but it is moving more towards after school. Oftentimes, we haven't seen a lot of libraries as sponsors themselves, but they definitely do work with other sponsors to bring meals in. And I think that's an interesting point about the enrichment and educational component that's required for the after-school meals program, because it can be as simple as like tutoring or homework help, which is a little bit easier to implement than a full program where it doesn't exist at the libraries. So one resource that I can share that's really wonderful if you haven't checked it out already is lunchatthelibrary.org, which is something that was created by the California Summer Meals Coalition. And it's a website dedicated to working with libraries, getting them to serve summer and after school meals. It has information on how to recruit volunteers and how to kind of start that conversation with libraries. Something that we often hear is that libraries are worried about the mess or the cleanup. So it really walks you through how to approach libraries and how to start that conversation. But I think it's interesting what you mentioned about the programming side of it. So I'm happy to have that conversation offline and chat a little bit more about that because, I mean, libraries do have staff and they have children that are going. So it would be a really great place to serve meals at. So thank you for your question, and I hope that helped. And I don't know if any of the other speakers want to touch on that at all if you're working with libraries.
Yeah, if you don't mind, let me jump in. This is Jim from Nashville. We're rather unique in that the NASA network is actually now housed in our public library system here in the city, and we have found that that it really has been a win-win partnership since we made the move over here a couple of years ago, but literally allowing us to really boost the focus of our partners during the academic time. All of our partners are required to roughly split their time. Half of their time each day has to be spent on academic related activities and the other half on enrichment. It has really allowed us to boost the trainings that we offer to our partners around literacy. It's really been a great partnership. What we have found, though, is a lot of times the library may have the facility that's available, but may not have the designated staff that have the focus for running extended learning opportunities. And what we have found is that, you know, they may have the facility, but if we could locate the partner that has the expertise in running an after school program, we might be able to bring that partner in and use that space and be able to develop a win-win for all parties.
Thank you very much. That helps a lot.
Sorry. Hi, this is Kevin from Oklahoma City Public Schools. And I have a question for all of you. Have any of you used prepackaged meals?
I mean, when you say prepackaged, you mean?
Like a kit? Like the, you know, all the components come in a kit, and it's shelf stapled, and you
okay.
Pass it out that way.
No, we have not done that in Philly.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
This is Susan in Denver. We actually use them pretty regularly. One of the things, though, is that our shelf-stable meals are something that kids will enjoy. Sometimes you really need to check on what is provided to those meals because sometimes it's not something that children really like to eat. Ours come with things like raisins, sun butter, applesauce. We have some that are prepackaged that also include cheese sticks that do require refrigeration. And we use them as part of the fresh foods that we provide, the fresh hot suppers and hot and cold suppers. But we actually use them as a way to control waste because we know that the vendor we use doesn't use a lot of preservatives in the food, so the food doesn't last as long. And so if there's a site that doesn't have consistent numbers, food gets wasted. So we use those shelf-stable meals to help control our costs and waste. And using that method and also a lot of active kind of strategizing with sites, we actually have a less than 1% waste rate. So I think they're a good strategy. But if you do use them, please check the what is provided and how kids like them, because, again, sometimes they're not so enjoyable. And then we had stories when the city of Aurora was using them, that from a previous food vendor, that they kids would just take them and then they would just basically throw them away.
Okay. I appreciate the input.
And Susan, can you share, did you mention the vendors that you use earlier on the call? Can you just share again who you use? I know that Revolution Foods is one, and I think they're expanding. Is that right?
Yes, Revolution Foods is actually a national company. They started, I believe, in California by a group of moms who were not happy with the food being provided to their children. And they're in a lot of different communities across the country. One of the things for cities to think about in their RFP process or their bidding out process, to really look at those priorities and say what it is that you want. So we put on there in our RFP that we wanted fresh food, we wanted preservative-free, we wanted guidelines that at minimum met, but more likely exceeded USDA guidelines, and that provided fresh fruit in our meals, so that we helped control who our food vendor was based on that. So those strategies are important for cities to think about, because we learned through the process that some vendors will say things, but until you put it actually into your agreements, they might not necessarily execute it in the actual implementation and service of the meals.
This is Andrea at the Archdiocese again, and I just wanted to just give you an idea of how we do the after-school supper program here. We actually don't use one food vendor. We buy our components on an individual basis from about 30 different vendors. So we have sandwich vendors, we have cheese vendors, our milk vendors, Wawa, snack vendors, fresh fruit, bagged fruit. We have a local company that makes us potato salad with turkey bacon. We have a company that makes us hummus locally, and each product is delivered to our subcontracted warehouse. They in turn, you know, bring in the food, store it, pack it into the individual boxes, both for the summer meals program and for the after-school cold supper program. And then those boxed meals are delivered to the site, and they need to be refrigerated, obviously. So we do it a little bit differently, where we have different vendors providing only their individual product. And by doing that, we, you know, have a little bit more of a variety as far as our fruits go and things like that.
Hi, Tommy!
Oh, that's great. Thanks for sharing. Just a reminder, everybody, the lines are open, so if you are not asking a question, if you can go ahead and just mute yourself so we don't hear any screaming in the background.
Mm-hmm. Are y'all talking about me out there?
No.
All right, and we did have a question come over email, and this one's kind of general. The question is, how would you suggest getting buy-in from a mayor that doesn't have hunger as one of his priorities? And that can be kind of open to any of our speakers who wants to answer.
That's a good one.
The conference is in lecture mode.
This is Susan. If there's not another speaker that can talk about this, I can talk about how through our mentoring grant from NLC that we did this with the City of Aurora. The City of Aurora, they actually had more of a stronger city manager role, so really was getting in buy-in with their city council and their city manager. Their mayor did have support for the program, but they really needed to go through those channels. And one of the things that the staff person that was working on at the time really did was she worked the relationships in the city council, and there weren't that many, But what she did was she got to the things that she knew would get to them. So as I mentioned before, they actually were using shelf-stable meals, and they were pretty unpleasant shelf-stable meals. And so at a committee meeting of the city council, she actually had those meals there, and then she actually provided a meal that she wanted to do with the food vendor that she was looking at and with the comprehensive after-school meal program. And that really won over the hearts and minds of city council. And then they pushed it in such a way that the city manager couldn't really disagree with. And so he ended up becoming a reluctant champion. But that really helped them to see, because when you have that visual there of what's being provided to kids, everyone understands that it's not something that will be good for children.
That's great. Thank you, Ben. And this is Clarissa. I would just say, too, that sometimes data can paint a very clear picture. So tap into, like I mentioned earlier, your anti-hunger organization. If you're looking for city-specific data, you can kind of pull together what sites are operating, where the need is, and that can really get more folks to the table and get more involvement. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and open the lines again. I muted them just because there was a little bit of background noise, but I'll give folks a couple more minutes to ask any questions that you might have.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are open.
Yeah, so I have to go over there and meet the principal.
Yeah, this is Jim in Nashville. If you don't mind, I'll speak to that last question that was asked. I think the approach that was mentioned really already really kind of speaks to kind of identifying what some of our political leaders, what are the key areas that they're wanting to focus on, what are their major concerns, and really trying to kind of build a bridge between those issues, those concerns, and hunger. For us, our foray, if you will, into the meals piece actually came more as a program quality issue, and less focused on hunger, but more focused on program quality. Our goal has been from the beginning that we wanted to offer high quality after school extended learning opportunities for young people around our city. And that was the push that we had from our political leadership. We have worked really hard to get our council members out to all of our partner sites to let them see the programs in action that are going on in their districts. But really kind of brought in the meals component by way of addressing a program quality piece and helping folks understand that that you know all the things that we all already know, and that is that it's very difficult or nearly impossible for a child to learn when they're hungry. Your discipline issues go up dramatically when they're hungry, and they don't always know that what's driving that is hunger. They don't know, may not know how to express that. And so so for us, it really was kind of connecting those issues around graduation rates for high school graduation rates, program quality, and those kinds of things. Really, kind of connecting the hunger piece to that, in kind of a roundabout way.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the overall message and how you mentioned quality is really important in another way to really get more buy-in for these programs. That's great. Thanks. All right. So I think we'll go ahead. We have a couple minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and just wrap up the call. Thank you again to our great speakers for joining us today. I hope that this has sparked some ideas.
The conference is in lecture mode.
All right. I hope this gives you some ideas on different ways to engage your city in these programs. And we have a lot of resources from our partnership with the National League of Cities on cities' role in this, so we'll go ahead and share that after the call. And if you haven't yet, you can find next month's Summer and After School Meals Matter conference calls registrations up. Next month we'll be talking about the new CACFP meal pattern and ideas and suggestions for implementing that. So we hope you can join us. Thanks, everyone, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
You too.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.